It's Power Hour LSU.
Let's freaking go. So, I want to ask you a question. Would you, watching this right now, turn down $100,000 to stay at your job? That's all I want to ask you. If I told you, you could quit and you make potential millions, all of you would do it. Every single one of you. I pay you to do what's best for you. But there are five LSU Tigers who theoretically decided to do the opposite. They decided to stay with this 4-1 LSU Tiger team. And I want to show them love at the beginning of a live stream. And we're going to get into some film breakdown. We just released our deepest Patreon breakdown of the year. You can check it out for yourself at the link down below. So, Monsoor Delane, A.J. Halsey, Jack Pyburn, Berrion Brown, and Xavion Thomas are doing something that should be commended. Now, before I continue, I do not know what their NIL deals and their contracts and so on actually say. And I actually know some of the gentlemen that we mentioned just then and there, okay? But I don't know their NIL. I never really want to know a player's NIL. But what I would tell you is they've looked at mortality in the eyes by deciding to play versus Ole Miss. So the way college football works right now is that you get 4 years of eligibility, but you get 5 years to play those 4 years of eligibility with the redshirt rule. As long as in one of those first four seasons you are at the school, you play four games or less, you are allowed a fifth year of eligibility, which in other words would be another year that you can actually cash in as a college football player. But the five guys that we mentioned just now were talented enough as true freshmen to not redshirt. And then they didn't redshirt as a sophomore. They didn't redshirt as a junior. And then they didn't redshirt as a senior. Now, there could be some extra medical stuff that I don't know. I could be totally missing something with one or two of those players. But they did not redshirt. They said, look, I am going to be honorable and actually play my 4 years of eligibility in four seasons. They could have very easily said, look, we just cashed in with LSU. We've all played well. Let's quit the team, go into the open market, and cash in another bag, which all five of these guys together would have made in total at the bare minimum at least $1 million, and each of them individually would have at least made $100,000 at the bare minimum as fifth-year starters in the SEC, whether it was going somewhere else or coming back to LSU. But they said, no, we're just going to go. Now, once again, their NIL deals that they signed with LSU or contracts or whatever was agreed upon, maybe there is no contracts. Maybe it said, hey, you've got to play out the season. You can't do that very thing. But you take a look at a school like South Carolina, This has happened to them twice. Over the last two seasons, they said, look, we are not letting you hang around. So they had a linebacker in the middle of last season who was playing. He looked at Shane Beamer in the eyes and said, Coach, I want a red shirt. I do not want to play the rest of the season. And his name was like Kingsley Ingabara. And he went into the portal and made a lot of money. A lot of money. He transferred to Kansas. They gave him a single-digit number. And he has started and played every game and been good. He quit the team. He spat in the face of Shane Beamer. And he said, hey, I'm not going to let you hang around. Go. And guess what happened to South Carolina again this week? Same damn thing. A tight end who plays a decent amount. His name is as basic of a name, so I'm not going to butcher it like I did a minute ago. Michael Smith, okay? It's amazing. You have crazy name, and then you have Michael Smith. That a tight end who said, look, F you, Shane Beamer. F you for recruiting me. F you for all of that. I am redshirting. He was supposed to be the starting tight end. He gets beat out, and he says, look, sayonara. He told Shane Beamer, hey, I just want a red shirt. Can I hang around? And he said, no. And I commend Shane Beamer for doing that. But those players did their thing, and they laced their own pockets. These five LSU Tigers. Now, before I continue with these five LSU Tigers, Monsoor Delane was always going to be a first-round pick. If he would have gone into the NFL draft this past season, he would have been a third or a fourth round pick. So him coming back made sense. And him not redshirting this year would have cost him a lot of money. But the other four guys aren't elite NFL draft prospects. And nor more than likely will they be. Okay. They're good college football players that love playing the sport. And they looked themselves in the mirror and said, look, I am all in on this year. So understand that you as a fan should commend these individuals because whether or not their NIL gets excluded, they are staring football mortality in the face. There are no guarantees that you're going to make it to the NFL. None. This is their final year. So in particular to the four that aren't elite draft prospects, some of them will be drafted. All of them might be drafted. They all have a good shot of being drafted, if we're being honest. But Pyburn, Brown, Halsey, and Xavion deserve a lot of credit for doing what they did. I'm serious, and you should commend them for that very thing. Now, this also speaks to Brian Kelly. You think about Brian Kelly, he's not had a lot of bad transfers, right? Most of the transfers that moved on, it made sense why they moved on, and a lot of them have not come back to bite LSU. The only big one that has really hurt LSU is Lance Hurd, but there is a smart, logical reason as to why that happened, okay? So, you know, it's impressive, and honestly really, really, really is impressive that even though Brian Kelly, I have criticized him as a coach, I have never criticized him more than I have in the past couple of weeks. He does have a good track record at LSU of people buying in and saying, look, we are going to make this work. We are going to be at LSU. Okay? We are going to do the damn thing. So there you go. Now, the next thing. I want to chat about Sellers. It's kind of scary that he has become more well-rounded as a quarterback. He has done some really good throwing from inside the pocket, and there have been a lot of difficult conversions he's made on fourth and threes, fourth and fives. There was a few versus Kentucky that have been really good. The truth, though, is that we still need to make him do that instead of him run all over us. Now, the thing that makes him very difficult is, yes, he absolutely destroyed us with his legs, destroyed us when he was on the field. And it changed when Robbie Ashford went into the game. We won the game because of some injury luck. I think a lot of us would agree with that. But the bigger problem for me in that game was we could not stop their running backs when he actually did hand the football off to Rocket Sanders. They ran all over us. Now, our rush defense is way better. It's way better than last year. We were the worst rush yards before contact defense in the SEC StatCat era last year. That's how bad we were. But this year, we are better at run defending. But on Patreon, and if you're a YouTube member, you have access to a film study I worked on for hours today. Equally as important as it is to stop Sellers, when he does these zone read types of things, you have to also account for the running back, all right, for two different reasons. The first is, because Sellers is such a great puller of the zone read, you've got to hold the backside end, and that takes him out of the fit if he actually does hand it off to the running back. So a lot of zone reads are stopped when the end is able to crash down who is unblocked to chase the running back down from the backside. That's not really possible with a guy like Sellers pulling the ball, okay? And it's even more important because a handoff is direct, right? Like, we don't want the guy to just have a wide open hole to run through. That happened so many times versus South Carolina last year. And in the Kentucky game, both of the rushing touchdowns that Kentucky gave up in the first half of that game, simply put, were defensive linemen getting out of their gaps. Okay, Kentucky in particular, the second one, they did a good job of actually maintaining and having all the gaps accounted for up until a point. A defenseman got a little too antsy, peeked, got out of his gap, and that's all she wrote. You have got to do your damn job when it comes to your run fits. You just do. You just do. If you don't, you are going to get your ass clapped. So we must be smart, do our jobs, and at the same time, one specific adjustment I would make is when you look at the big runs we gave up last year and you look at the big runs we gave up in this past game, the single most overrated thing when it comes to rush defense is defensive line penetration. It is so overrated. It is a cost-benefit analysis that doesn't really make a lot of sense when you look at it from a defensive lineman's point of view, okay? Now, I don't mind linebackers knifing in and making plays, but defensive linemen, I'm fine with tackles for loss. It's just when you over-penetrate and you don't actually make the tackle for loss, guess what? You're opening up massive, massive holes in the run game. Massive. Ginormous. And what can happen is guys can run wild. They can run wild. So what I would do is not stunt or slant my defensive lineman. Because what can happen is if you're just gap shooting, they can just flush you out and just use your momentum against you. And that's what happened on the Lacy touchdown last week that we gave up in the first half. And it opens up that gap even wider. So I prefer to engage and make things muddy. Muddy it up. But we've got to maintain gap discipline. They are going to try to force us to get out of our gaps. That's as simple as you possibly can break it down. You do not need to know football to understand this. Are there some things in football where schemes get very exotic and it's way over all of our heads? Yes. But if you don't know anything about football, it is pretty simple. You are responsible as a defender in the box, if you will, defensive line and linebackers, for a gap on every play. In most defensive schemes, a Aranda scheme is a little bit different, but In a traditional four-down lineman scheme, you're responsible for a gap. Sometimes you're responsible for two. But in that gap, you've got to stay in your gap and do your job. Okay? You've got to do your job. Ryan says AJ Halsey is definitely going to be drafted. Yes. He's playing too well to not be drafted. It's just now the NFL just values elite, elite, elite athleticism at like every position. Okay? And Halsey isn't going to be a guy that's going to run unfreaking believably fast. Okay? I actually reached out an NFL evaluator that I know that's worked in a front office and asked about AJ Halsey a few weeks ago, and that's what he brought up. But he's obviously going to play in the NFL for a very, very, very long time. My point, though, at the beginning, though, was that of those five guys, one has elite NFL prospects, and it would be a miracle if he wasn't a first-round pick, and that is Montour Millane, okay? It's amazing how much more the NFL values corners than they do safeties. Whereas our guest a few weeks ago brought this up. He's worked in multiple college football front offices, Cooper Petania. He brought up that safeties, to him, are more important in college. And then in the NFL, the corners are more important than the safeties. And I actually do agree with that. They're both very important. Very, very, very important. But in the NFL, if I had to choose between Kyle Hamilton and Patrick Surtain, I'm probably going to take Surtain a good bit of the time. But obviously, it's scheme dependent as well. We say hi to Geo Dude. Good to see you. And Alexander wants to talk about Xavier Debo Atkins. He's been balling at Auburn. Yes, he has. He's had a good season. He's still a friend of the channel. He's still up there with some of the best interviews we've ever done. He's at Auburn. We don't play Auburn. I'm quietly rooting for him. But obviously, Auburn is a team like us that's not in the SEC upper echelon. And when push comes to shove, we might be competing against them for potential playoff selection. Anything can happen this year. I'm not putting it past anybody at this point to win the whole shebang or actually even just make the college football playoff. Okay? Now, a few other things as far as LSU is concerned. We talked about it being a big recruiting weekend, which is cool. I'm excited about that. But one thing that's starting to be very interesting as far as LSU is concerned, you look at where LSU is weak this year. Where are we weak? Well, you can't really say anywhere defensively LSU is weak. We've had some holes. If there was one minor weakness, it would be a traditional pass rush. But you go to the offensive side of the football, we are weak in quite a few spots. And it is kind of difficult as, an LSU YouTuber, just a college football YouTuber, when the biggest issue is your offensive line. Offensive line play is brutal to talk about when it's a weakness. It is brutal. Because for your more common fan, when your quarterback is sucking, it's pretty easy to see, okay? It's pretty easy to understand if your quarterback is just downright atrocious, which Garrett Nussmeier is not atrocious. You could say he's bad, but he's not atrocious. You could say he's been playing bad. In fact, you can't even say he's bad. You could say he's mediocre right now. Sure, that's fair. But right now, the offensive line for LSU has some downright atrocious play going on. And it's difficult to actually talk about because there are so many different factors that go into it. So many. And to me, I do think LSU will try a few things differently when it comes to their offensive line on Saturday. you should be a little bit more experimental during the bye week. Anyway, when your team sucks in a certain department, this is not the NFL where you're only given 53 roster slots. You have a gazillion guys on a college football roster. You have a bunch of guys you recruited. See what you have in Ori Williams or Ethan Callaway or anyone like that. Maybe they are the answer. I don't know. But during this bye week, I really hope LSU experimented with a few different things to see if it could work on Saturday versus a very good South Carolina team. Let's go to C. Oh, God. I thought this is actually one of the better puns. C. D. Snuts. I remember one time in college, I snuck into some function that I had no business being at. And I was just a stupid college kid. And they say, hey, what's your name? And I said, it's H-U-G-H. And they said, oh, okay. Hey, Mr. Hugh, good to see you. And they said, oh, so my first name. My last name is J-A-S-S. And so they're like, oh, okay, Mr. Jazz, welcome. So I walked around with the name tag. Sound it out for yourself, and you'll be able to figure it out. Okay. Oh, man. My name tag translates to Prime Kim Kardashian. Anyway, this is a big game for Brian Kelly. Got to be ready to sit anyone that's not performing at a high level. If he loses this game, might lose the defensive confidence and waste a championship defense. You are right. And this is obviously the big macro thing that Brian Kelly has now done quite a few of these stunts, if you will, where there is all-time levels of ineptitude on certain teams where the opposite is true on the other side of the football. Of course, you go back to 2022, the worst special teams units we've ever seen at LSU. Then in 2023, the worst defense we've ever seen at LSU, arguably. Then when we get to 2024, we mentioned it a minute ago, the worst rush yards before contact defense we've ever seen at LSU. Then in 2025, this is arguably the worst offense. Now, we can get into semantics about, hey, who is where in terms of who is the worst. The bottom line is, it sucks that every year there is a conversation about this side of the football is the worst we've seen at LSU. Okay? So let's go to here. What do I think about Kyren Lacy? Well, once again, I shared everything I wanted to share on Sunday. I have not lost sleep about any story more than this one. It is extremely sad, and I'll never get over it. I just won't. And I've shared a few times that I know someone in Kyren's orbit. It's extremely sad. And yeah, there's obviously new details. I give Matt Ori, his lawyer, a lot of credit for seeing this through. So once again, my prayers go out to the Lacy family. And in our description, there's a link to the Lacy Foundation. Oh, Pegasus randomly bringing up Deion retiring. I think it's the opposite. I think there's going to be some interest for Deion at a few other jobs. But could I see him retiring? Absolutely. And the thing about Deion retiring, and this is brought up for a lot of players, and we brought it up with Tyrann Mathieu. He got a pretty nice broadcasting job pretty quickly with the NFL. If Deion retires, he would be the biggest sports media free agent since Tom Brady, okay? And Tom Brady made $25 million a year to call games. Do I think Deion fetches that? I mean, he could. I mean, he's that big of a needle mover. If you were to think about the biggest needle movers in football, in terms of big names, it's Tom Brady, then the Mannings, and then it's probably Deion Sanders. And Deion's a little bit different than those, the Mannings and Tom, is that Deion has now been the biggest story in college football for a few years now. And when he played, he's arguably the biggest defensive star we've ever seen in the game of football. So I could definitely see him retiring and Fox just giving him a fat check to call games, or game day giving him a check, because it's obviously a competition with Fox News, the Fox kickoff story. But yes, final thing, just keep praying for Kyron and everyone involved with that. Let's go to Freewood, Carter. What do you believe is the problem on offense? Well, everything we've been discussing, and then obviously I'm glad you asked, because there's another aspect of this. And before I answer that, I do need to shout out two of our biggest supporters. We couldn't do this without Brian and Sherry Berry. And it's crazy. So before I answer this from Free Woo, this is critical. Okay. And I really want you to bring this in to your hearts and souls. I'm not going to get to meet every single one of you guys. Like, it's impossible for that. Hopefully I get to, but I've gotten to meet Brian. I've never gotten to meet Sherry Berry. Sherry Berry has been with us for forever, and she has some of her family friends that are family friends with my wife's family friends, because they go to the same church, ironically. But just know, whether I meet you in person or not, I appreciate every single person that supports what we are doing. Obviously, I got to meet Tony at some point, because Tony has got perfect attendance to every one of our live streams. What is the problem of the LSU offense? Well, you know, I want everyone, because I'm sure a lot of you watched the New Orleans Saints game on Saturday, okay? I say Saturday, on Sunday. And the truth is, the Saints were outplayed by the Giants. They were. The Giants were probably the better team in the first half, and they controlled portions of the second half. The difference is, the Saints won all the things that truly move the needle in a football game, which is explosive plays. Okay, we finally hit a deep shot to Rashid Shaheed, who's one of the best pure deep threats in the NFL. Okay, we had the explosive turnovers, had the fumble recovery for a long touchdown, and so on and so on. Okay, so when you win the explosive play battle, it makes life so much easier. All right. And this is a big problem with Garrett missing the big throws, okay? It's that when you miss the big throws, that means offensively it takes more plays for you to put points up on the board. It just does. One 70-yard touchdown is oftentimes better than a 9-yard or a 90-yard 17-play drive, okay? Now, most coaches would tell you, hey, I want the 70-play drive that for 90 yards. That's what we want, because we're keeping their defense off the field. And guess what? I agree with that in theory. But those drives are hard, because those drives can stall with one holding penalty, one missed call, one player getting tripped up, is his helmet coming off, the backup comes in, and he blows his block, and someone's helmet gets knocked off, and there's a fumble, and 1,000 different bad things happen. So when you think of it from the explosive play battle, it's not just that Garrett is missing some of these deep balls that would give you, boom, immediate touchdowns, and just immediate flips and momentum and field position and all of that. It increases the amount of things that need to go right for you to go down the field and score. Now, why were we able to matriculate the football slowly up and down the field last year? Well, for one, we were better when we hit the deep shots. And then number two, we just had better players. We just had better players. Our tackles were way better. Tight end way better. Guards way better. Our overall offense was better. CJ Daniels was really good for us. Kyren Lacy was really good for us. Aaron Anderson was really good for us. We just have better players. And we have better players, it's easier to matriculate the football up and down the field. But if you don't have better players, those explosive plays that are given to you, you've got to hit them. You've got to. Because when you miss them, once again, everybody else that we know at this point is average, they've got to do one more thing right. And it's not just one more thing right. They've got to do four or five more things right for you to actually go put points on the board. Kenneth, good to have you back, man. The truck, I remember everything about Kenneth. I was thinking about you a minute ago. I was like, yeah, what happened to the PHLer whose name is shared with a pretty good running back with the Seattle Seahawks? Kenneth, you got to let us know what's going on in your life, man. So coming up after this, who will be the explosive play answer versus South Carolina?
Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LaboardTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LaboardTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LaboardTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their five locations all throughout the Lafayette region.
PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and FortifiedGulf.com. This is my buddy, Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
The Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you. It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563, or visit fortifiedgulf.com. That's FortifiedGulf.com. Let's go.
Round of applause
for our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and fortifiedgulf.com for supporting us. Now, this is a little clip from the Patreon film study. I highly recommend you join our Patreon or our YouTube membership program. You'll have access to this. I do think we will finally get the Chris Hilton deep shot in this game versus South Carolina. I want to share the opening piece to this because I feel like this could very well decide the game. Dual threat quarterbacks. It's that over the past couple of years, and this actually predates Brian Kelly, this was a huge problem in the Ed Orgeron era, our DTs and ends would get out of their assigned gaps. Now, a guy like Jack Pyburn has made this problem shrink because he is the absolute best at this. This is why we had him on our channel. He broke down how to properly do this, okay? So it's not really the running quarterbacks that have been an issue. It's even when they hand the football off, we get ourselves into trouble. So because you have to really account for the quarterback in the run game, you lose the backside contain crashing down and making plays on the running back. So because you lose that, it is so critical that your actual defensive linemen do not over-penetrate, okay? So we have a blitzer blitzing through this play-side A-gap. We have a blitzer going through this A-gap. And honestly, every gap is accounted for. But watch what actually happens. 90 peaks around here, and this is actually fine. This is called two-gapping, where you peek around, and when he runs through, you then cross-face and help out with the tackle. The problem here is Faison does a good job of pressing and then bouncing this. The ball should be in his right hand, by the way. But he does a good job of bouncing this, and you can see that 90 loses sight of the ball carrier. Because Faison pressed, he was able to then bounce, and you can see 90 is looking for Faison to be running through the gap that the linebacker is accounting for. He's doing too much. We just need you to stay in your gap. He doesn't, and that's why Faison is able to score untouched into the end zone. All righty. So there you go. Check it out for yourself, the full Patreon breakdown. Let's go to Kenneth. Life is good. I've been battling stage 4 liver cancer since last December, doing chemo every 2 weeks, but I'm feeling great these days. My prayers go out to you, Kenneth. The fight is yours. You got this, bro. And you get that CDL, and then boom, life hits you. I remember you jumping into the chat saying, yo, I passed. That's awesome. Good to have you. Good to see Tyler. This is not totally off topic, but why didn't they bring tight end in line and duo blocks across the front against Ole Miss 6-3 to run the ball? I don't know X's and O's a lot, okay? So it's obviously tough to answer from here. I don't know. What is this junk on my nose? You probably should never say that, especially if it was like a white dot on your nose. Yeah, we are now sponsored by Tony Montana. I don't know what that was. Nothing crazy. But, Jason, it's because our offense just stinks. I mean, we had some good numbers counts, okay? And Brian Kelly talked about this audibly, and I could go pull up the clip, but I won't. I'll pull it up for tomorrow's show, Jason. Remind me to do that. But the run game, kind of like how football is a gap game, you're responsible for your gap. Okay, so think about what's a good way for me to describe this? Okay, it's like a hair clip. Okay, and I know most of our viewers are male, but you know what I'm talking about. There's a hair clip, and each one of those teeth of those hair clip have a gap that they fill in. Okay. So that's gap sound football. That's what you theoretically want as a defense, okay? But football also is just a math game in terms of box numbers. The problem for LSU over the past couple of seasons is teams could line up in very soft pre-snap alignments and we not be able to run on those alignments. So you mentioned the duo rush schemes. Why aren't we doing more duo stuff? Well, duo, you've got to have, as is the case with any run schemes, you got to have the dudes to run it. 2019 was a mostly duo attack with Clyde. And Clyde is just a perfect duo back because he could process everything in front of him. And we had Lloyd Cushenberry. We had Damian Lewis. Those guys are still in the NFL playing a long time. Our guards can barely stand upright. I'm serious. They struggle staying on their feet. So we don't really have the guys to punish the softer boxes. And when those softer boxes are presented to us, we do something called, and it's more of a poker term, gaining the minimum or it should be more so from the defensive side of the football, this logic. The defensive side of the football loses the minimum. All right, so a good example, and it was a tweet that we clipped, and it kind of got shared quite a bit, and it made one backup-ish LSU player look bad in Cohen Echols. But the reason I shared it is, you know, we think of when LSU gives up these big sacks with Garrett Nussmeier, we think of those plays as the big, big plays that we give up, right? Like, they're the disaster plays, the 20-yard sacks, if you will. But theoretically, what also has hurt LSU equally as bad is when we have things that are given to us that the defense is basically given us for free, and we don't take advantage of it. So in the Cohen Echols play, it was like a second down run with Juwan Johnson, and we should have picked up at least 10 yards. Ole Miss had the softest box. They weren't even looking into the backfield. And what happened? Well, Cohen Echols tripped on his own feet. He might have gotten nicked by the center, but he fell down, and that clogged the gap, and it only ended up being a 4 or 5 yard gain when most offenses there are picking up no less than 8 or 9 yards. And if you were to look at a lot of the plays that we actually had in that game, the positive yardage plays that we actually gained, there were many of them where we gained the minimum. Okay. Quick screen out to 22 Harlan Berry. That's what we want. All right. True freshman sensation in space. We gained the minimum because we missed a block from Tredez Green, and it only ended up being 4 or 5 yards. Well, 4 or 5 yards are good, right? Yes, it's good, but it could have been better. All right, it's kind of like in poker. In poker, it is great, absolutely wonderful when you hit a flush. If you hit a flush off the flop, you are set. But things change when the board pairs on the turn. Okay, now you can be beat. All right, you could be absolutely crushed in that situation, but you don't want to fold your hand, right? So it's key to gain the maximum while at the same time defensively losing the minimum. And LSU has not done a great job of gaining the maximum amount of numbers when we actually do run for 4 or 5 yards, when a lot of those runs should be no less than 7 or 8 at the bare minimum. Okay. And guess what? Defenses look at that as wins. They look at that as wins. And the reason why that can get very complex is per success rate, a stat that determines if a play is successful or not. Success rate would call that Cohen Echols run from Juwan Johnson as a successful play. We picked up a first down, moved the chains and all of it, but it should have been more successful, right? It's a good run for 4 yards. So 4 yards per carry, that's fine. That's good. All right, so we need to do a better job of gaining the yards that are actually given to us. It's key. It's really, really, really key. Let's go to my BFF. Jace Max wants to know, why is Kentucky so bad? Jace Max is a younger PHLer. And he doesn't know that. I talk to Jace Max more than anyone in this chat, honestly. So this was actually a passion project of mine 3 years ago, where on Power Hour SEC, I did two separate, one was 50 minutes long and the other was like 15-minute long videos on how Kentucky never really was good. Now, they were fine for Kentucky, but they had a lot of things go their way, and the way that they scheduled was way different than all the other SEC schools. All right, so they were able to game a schedule for a long period of time in the Stoops era that made their schedules easier to about a Big 12 level schedule compared to a normal SEC level schedule. Okay, so that's one thing I've gotten a lot of blowback for that opinion, because I get the, Well, did you know Mark Stoops is the best coach there since Bear Bryant and all that shit? And it got old. And now Mark Stoops is being exposed because he's just not that good. But then again, of course, Kentucky, they use more of their NIL to basketball. But there was a viral interview. There's a big, big, big Kentucky radio host named Matt something. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank. I've met him before. I've met a few of the KSR guys. It's a big station in Lexington. And they said if they needed to pay the buyout now, they've got the money. And that buyout for Mark Stoops would be $30 million minimum. So, and that would need to be paid in the next 60 days. And I said at the time, this is going to be one of the worst extensions in college football history. So Stoops signed that extension, and the next day they lost to Vanderbilt. Not Pavia Vanderbilt. I'm talking about when Vanderbilt was ass. When they were downright ass. Ass. Like sexy red ass. That's how ass they were. So, you know, I think Kentucky's in an interesting spot. And I also remember the Mark Stoops for LSU rumors that were out. That was a real thing. Thank goodness that didn't happen. Yeah, Jason, that's a hot take. I don't know why you bring up 30. They've not scored 24 in an actual game this season. They've not put up 24. Can we do 24 before we get to 30? I don't care. If we win this game 17-14, I'll take it. I do think a lot of you are doing an emotional hedge in betting LSU to cover 9 or betting South Carolina to cover 9.5. And I'm leaning in that direction as well. If I had to make a play on that game, I would do it. It's just, you know, there's trap games like this every single week in the SEC. Okay. It seems like South Carolina is a play here at 9.5. But I wouldn't do it, man. I'm staying away from this game. The total is way too low. It's still very low, even though we've had some upward movement. And you've got to be careful when these lines are like this. Okay, you just do. All right, they know something that you don't. Let's see. I want to make sure that we haven't had any movement since the beginning of the show here. Now, still at 9.5. Totals dip back down to 43.5. Interesting. Yeah, it's dipped back down a little bit. Okay. Now, I have had time to sleep on this. And the portal transfer window being just one window is a take and a story that I don't agree with. I think there should be two portal windows. I do. I really, really, really do. But, you know, college football is going to college football. They're going to do what they're going to do. Player X is LSU by 10. That's what it's probably going to be, 27-10 or 27-17, excuse me. So there you go. I do need to be out by 7 tonight. So Christopher, good to see you. So in the next 10 minutes, I'll answer as many as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep this party moving. I want to shout out Dylan and Julie. They just booked me to DJ their wedding. and I'll be in Baton Rouge here in a few weeks. I say they just booked me. They've actually booked me for like a year and a half now. But we had our, I do consultation calls with all my brides and grooms to go over a playlist and how they want the night to go. And this was our first, or our second call, but our first call before the big day. I want to do your wedding. I love DJing weddings. There's nothing funner than a packed dance floor. And this was interesting. You know, at the end of shows, if you're new here, we get into a few different topics. So they do not want line dances. And I'm not a big line dance DJ. I love playing line dances, though, because most weddings I do, they want a lot of line dances. Most charity events I do, they want Cupid and Boots on the Ground. And I'm a huge Cupid fan. Cupid Shuffle does not get old for me. It never does. Partially because Cupid's a friend of the channel. But I want to do your wedding. I do. Let's go to Alexander. I didn't want to do too much Garrett Nussmeier MVB talk today. I try to intentionally avoid it because it gets old. I don't want my audience to get fatigued by it, but you can't ignore it. If MVB plays, would it be in a loss only? Yeah, the idea of MVB playing has grown on me quite a bit, and I was a big Nuss guy, huge Nuss guy. But the things that Nuss weren't great at have not gotten better, and some of it's injury-related. And the things that MVB does well, or just what he does, is where Garrett is weak. I don't know. I think Garrett plays and we find a way to get it done. Okay. Let's go to Tyler. Tyler's been all over this week. If Nuss can walk out there, BK is going to play him. Yeah, Brian Kelly's won. What's made him interesting is historically when he was at Notre Dame, he wasn't afraid of playing multiple QBs. He just wasn't. But at LSU, it's been different. You know, when the cries were louder for Garrett to play over Jaden, when Jaden was really struggling, Brian Kelly rightfully stuck with Jaden and won us a Heisman. So, BK, since he's been at LSU, has been pretty firm with his quarterback decisions, which you have to respect. But I do think the pressure to play MVB is about at times where it was with Garrett and Jaden. The difference is Jaden in his first year had some games that were as tough as Garrett. It was different though, because Jaden wasn't turning it over. Garrett's bad games feature turnovers. And Jaden had an immaculate second year. This is happening. A lot of Garrett's shortcomings has happened in year two. Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. But look, there were times where Jaden's QB play was tough. It was really, really, really tough. I thought that season LSU should have started Garrett in the Grambling game in week two. And I had had that opinion way earlier in the offseason just to give Garrett a start in a game that you know you're going to win big. Turned out that that was the smart decision to let Jaden get more chemistry with his receivers. But I'm always a believer in that. If the LSU offense would have been as good as we thought it could have been this year, and they had actually looked competent in the first couple of weeks, I would have started MVB versus Southeastern. I think you should always start your backup versus an FCS school. No, I was on there last night. Preston Guy was our guest last night. We'll have a South Carolina guest on tomorrow, who the last time he was on, the next day he got married, which is wild. And it was either the next day or the week before. We were just talking about weddings. Joe Flacco to the Bengals. I'm really excited about that. Oh, that Jaden drive was special versus Florida State. You can argue that was his best drive at LSU. And then the Alabama game where Jaden was really good versus a Saban defense. Oh, look, I could put the comments up here now. Let me change this backdrop here. You see him a little bit better with the is Dylan Stewart generational? I'll be honest, I'm mostly focused on the South Carolina offense today and yesterday as well. I'll start looking deeper into the South Carolina defense, but you can run on them. Not having the defensive tackle play that they had last year is big. Okay. But I also think you could throw on their secondary, like Missouri did a few weeks ago. But once again, I've not gone too deep into that. Let me ask you guys this before I continue, because some of my NFL stuff's doing really well. I'm always going to like college more than NFL, just because of my love for LSU. But I love the NFL. I probably grew up watching more NFL than college in general. But I grew up watching more LSU than anything else. Do you like the NFL now more than ever, basically? I've always just loved it. It is a little bit difficult now because Drew Brees isn't playing. So I'm guessing most of y'all don't like it. Kenneth, we'll see you. But, God, I freaking love the NFL so much. I really, really, really do. Like, there's a piece of me that just wants to go all in and just do college football content. But the NFL just keeps pulling me back. And the Jaguar fans have really been pushing my stuff. But, and now they're winning. But it's so interesting how different the NFL is in college. Like, it's so, so, so interesting. And the thing that I found that's wild is, to me, the college defensive players are further away than the NFL defensive players, than vice versa. I think the gap between college NFL players to NFL offensive players is big. It's big. But it's not as big as the gap between college defensive talent to the NFL defensive talent. And I used to think it was the opposite by quite a bit. But there you go. Now, big thanks to our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast. Big thanks as well to our friends at Laborde Therapy. And once again, keep praying for Kyron's family. His foundation link is down below. For our patrons, you have the film study. I spent a lot of time doing it a little bit earlier today. It is linked down below. And it's also part of your YouTube membership. If you're a YouTube member, hit that join button and you get a cool logo next to your name. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Central. We have a very fun guest. It is Power Hour NFL. Boom. Tonight, we are doing... Oh, spaghetti. Let's go.